The following podcast is scheduled for one fall. From the heart of Broadway in historic downtown Cape Girardeau, this is Pro Wrestling Unscripted.
It's Wednesday, April 8th, 2020, and welcome to a very strange Pro Wrestling Unscripted here on the Podzilla 1985 Network. What's up, guys? My name is Shannon Young, back after, I think this is my first show in 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. I don't know. The days kind of blend together at this point. With me, of course, my very good friend and co-host of Pro Wrestling Unscripted, Asa Gray, the five-star man.
All five.
And Asa, this is weird. This is the first show I've ever done via remote in. So I'm at home at my estate. Asa is at his mansion. And we are talking about wrestling and we can't see each other. And this is the first time I've ever done that. And it's very, very strange.
Yeah, this is it's good to have you back.
Thank you.
I miss you greatly.
It's good to be back. It's been a very strange couple of weeks. I feel like I'm getting some sort of normalcy back to my existence. And then, of course, this week, as you know, but the people out there probably don't know, our store closed, Gaming Grounds. We closed it down for safety reasons. So for the past couple of days, I've just been at home day in, day out. And it's just the strangest feeling in the world. I don't like it. I know a lot of people want to be home right now. Because of the scary thing that's going on, but it's very strange for me to be home all the time, and I'm not a fan of it. Although I have been getting in a lot of exercise. When we come back to CCW, I think I'm going to look significantly different than when I left, and I'm kind of excited about that.
I'm also last week on, they made the decision to do work from home for half of our office at a time. So Thursday and Friday, me and one other person worked from home, and the other three people is still in the office. Then all this week, it's me and the other person in the office, and the work from home people and then the other three are at home. So then this coming week, I will be at home all day, like every day. And I'm not going to lie, I very much enjoyed working from home. That was a good time, because it was like, oh, my lunch break. I'm going to take a shower, or I'm going to go through a mission of Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, I think if I could work from home, it would be different. And at some point, I would like to start working on projects while I'm here. This is a good opportunity for me to do that. But right now, I'm very much still in kind of a recovery phase after everything that's been going on. For those of you who are longtime Pro Wrestling Unscripted fans, I do want to apologize. You know, we miss Dalton. We miss Allie. We miss half the cast, and I know this is very strange just hearing Asa and I talk. It's maybe a little less strange than hearing just Asa talk for the past 2 weeks, but I do want to say, Asa, you did a fantastic job. You really did, and I'm really glad to be back on here with you. I miss you a lot.
Yeah, no, it was weird. I just, especially with, like, if it wasn't WrestleMania season, I don't know if I would have, like, even done just the solo shows. I might have done, like, a written thing, because I kind of toyed around with doing that, but everything's weird, just all over the place, including this year's WrestleMania was super weird.
Oh my God. I can't wait until the end of the year when we can do our 2020 recap and talk about all this. hopefully from a better place than where we are now.
At this point, we're both going to be in our 60s by the end of the year.
I've aged. Well, I was already 60. That's the problem. I think I'm up to 79 at this point, and it's scary.
No, I'm gonna catch up. I'm just going to catch up to you.
You could take some of my years. Oh, I got a text. I'm sorry. I'm not used to getting texts when I'm doing this. I apologize. And yeah, I know
we're not used to doing this because I have I'm just looking at your Facebook avatar.
I'm just looking at the screen, making sure my audio sounds good.
I've got that pulled up on my other monitor. Yeah.
I want to, thank you guys for tuning in and sticking with us. We're going to talk about wrestling in just 1 second. I just want to mention that I know it's very strange right now. I know that it's, this is weird. We know it's weird, but for myself and for Asa and for Jesse and Lindsay and everyone on the cast, past and present, everyone associated with Podzilla 1985, thank you so much for sticking with us. We love you so much, and we are worried about all of you, and we want to make sure everyone is safe. So before we get into it, please continue to honor those social distancing guidelines. Remember to take care of each other. We will get through this. Things will get back to normal at some point, and God, I cannot wait for that point. But before then, we do have some wrestling to talk about. We're going to talk about WrestleMania here in a second, but I guess I wanted to start off by talking about something that we were talking about in that legendary group chat, which has been that much more important to me lately because of the isolation that I feel being here at home all the time. We talked about the Brawl for All episodes, the newest episode of Dark Side of the Ring, which aired, I believe, yesterday?
I want to say.
Dark Side of the Ring is a fantastic documentary series. If you've never watched it, it's on Vice. Last season was incredible. This season's been incredible. I have not seen the New Jack episode. I did watch the Chris Benoit episode, and it was amazing. Heartbreaking, so many different things. And last night, they did Brawl for All, which is one of the most interesting train wrecks I think that has ever existed in professional wrestling. And I just wanted to talk about it for a second because there were things on there that have you seen the newest episode?
No, I haven't.
There were things that they revealed in there that I had no idea about. Like, I was not aware, because at the time, especially when Brawl for All aired, I wasn't quite an internet junkie like I am now, and certainly wasn't doing a podcast where we talk about wrestling. So a lot of this information was new to me, but the fact that basically the Brawl for All was created as a way for Vince Russo to see JBL get smacked around because he was such an annoying dick is both not surprising, but also still kind of disappointing. Because, like, I knew Vince Russo was always kind of a garbage person. I never liked him. But to be so petty about JBL's attitude, but at the same time, I kind of get it because I also don't like JBL. I've always thought he was a bully and a dick. So I also...
Yeah, there's really no good guys in that situation.
Except for Bart Gunn. That's the thing I wanted to... The one thing I wanted to press on this most is... and it's a fascinating documentary. Please go out of your way to watch it. You can catch it on Vice. They may post it on YouTube. They've been doing that lately. You can catch an illegal stream of it on YouTube if you look up the right keywords. I'm not going to tell you what they are, but, you know, you could.
It's important to note that, like, whenever someone makes something like this, it's very, very important to support them.
Yes.
Because that's how these things get made. So if everyone just goes out and pirates it, then we're not really going to get anything else like this.
Yeah, you got to support. You got to support, absolutely. But back to my point being that Bart Gunn, I never liked Bart Gunn. I always thought he was boring. I never really got him. But seeing him talk in this was very eye-opening, and I really appreciate him more and what he went through, you know, especially when they started talking about Dr. Death and how this was really kind of meant to be Dr. Death's big moment. This was going to lead into a program with Stone Cold Steve Austin. Dr. Death was being primed for it. Everyone just assumed he was going to win. And when Bart Gunn said, you know, like, hey, I'm going to win, especially there's a part where he's talking to, I think he said it was Bruce Pritchard. And he was talking to him about the next matchup was going to be him versus Dr. Death. And he told him, well, is there going to be any heat on me when I knock Dr. Death out? They laughed at him. And then the boys in the back were laughing at him, like, oh, you're going to knock out Dr. Death. Right, here's the guy that's going to knock out Dr. Death. And it was embarrassing. And it fueled Bart Gunn to go out there and fight. And Bart Gunn was a killer in that tournament. Knocked out, I think, everybody except his first opponent, which was, I believe, Bob Holly, which I think went to a decision. But Bart Gunn ended up looking like a beast. WWE didn't know what to do with him. He knocked Dr. Death out. He knocked JBL out. And probably the most telling part of it was the fact they actually had Butterbean on an interview.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I've always been a fan of Butterbean. I always thought he was kind of a cool dude. And he talked about how when he was going out, Vince McMahon kind of, you know, nudged him and gave him a smile. It said that Vince McMahon wanted him to knock out Bart Gunn as a punishment for daring to go against what they wanted when he knocked out, you know, Dr. Death. So none of it's surprising. It's all completely in character for those guys, but it was very, very interesting, fascinating. I highly recommend it. There's a couple of really sad moments. They interviewed Darren Drozdoff, and I always get very sad when I see Darren Drozdoff because of, you know, the unfortunate incident that happened with him and D'Lo, and they did talk about that too, and they interviewed both him and D'Lo about it, and that was a very somber moment.
Did they talk about the incident on this episode?
Yes.
As just because they're like, hey, this is... this is, you know, Draws and this is why he's in a wheelchair type deal, like to introduce who he was? Or was it a separate part of the episode?
It was later in the episode. It was kind of a here's what's happened to the people that were in the tournament kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
And they explained what happened to Draws, and that's very, very sad. You know, and him and D'Lo, you can tell D'Lo is still haunted by it, as anyone would be.
Yeah, how could you not be?
The Godfather was on it quite a bit. He is hilarious. Obviously, the dude's charismatic as hell. There's no doubt about it. And we got some of my favorite things in professional wrestling, even though we're going to talk about him later in a negative light, Jim Cornette versus Vince Russo. Because Jim Cornette absolutely despises Vince Russo, and it was for reasons like this, because Vince Russo basically put all these wrestlers in danger and embarrassed them and ruined their careers almost simply because he wanted to embarrass JBL. And
I did see the clip of, because someone clipped it out and put it on Reddit, of it was the where Vince Russo and Cornette were talking about each other very briefly, yeah, for maybe a couple minutes, and Cornette kind of, he's like, oh, the thing that bugs him about it, and it was amazing. Because you have Vince Russo say, like, man, you're threatening to kill my family over wrestling? It's just wrestling. And then it cuts to Cornette saying, you know, oh, he says it's because it's only wrestling, it's just wrestling. Wrestling's the most important thing in my life for, you know, 30 years.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, that makes a little bit more sense, but
it's one of those things.
Doesn't excuse any of the terrible things you've said or done.
No, and it's one of those things where, like, I hate to say it, I genuinely like Jim Cornette on some things and his passion for the business. And then there are other times where I completely despise him because he's such a narrow-minded asshole. Mm-hmm. And I hate that because I really appreciate some of the things Jim Cornette says, and I agree with them. And then there are other things that are just so out there that I'm embarrassed to say I appreciate it. So it puts me in an awkward situation. But yeah, go check it out. Brawl for All, the newest episode from Dark Side of the Ring, highly recommended. That whole series is just incredible. I know we don't do the MF-er of the week on wrestling usually, but I have one this week. And can I please say it just real quick?
Sure, go ahead.
Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan, the man I have defended on this show and used as an example on this show more than once, and with the whole coronavirus thing, and I know you know about this because we've talked about it, his post about maybe we don't need a vaccine, we just need Jesus. Look, I really don't have a lot against religion. I think religion is a good idea, and I know a lot of people who are religious who are incredible people, but this is dangerous. That is a dangerous way to think. That we don't need science, we don't need doctors, this is God's punishment, and we need to pray to God. I'll say the same thing that I said when we had the mass shootings, and they came out with that wonderful article, that front page headline that said, God isn't fixing this. Same thing here. God is not going to fix this. So for Hulk Hogan to go out there and say things that are so dangerous, I think he deserves that title. So I just wanted to throw that out there now. And I love Hulk Hogan. I love Hulk Hogan from the 80s. You know how I feel about Hulk Hogan. I
love the TV character Hulk Hogan.
I like the persona of Hulk Hogan, but I finally unfollowed him. I finally unfriended him on Facebook, and I'm just like, dude. And I posted on it, too. I'm sure he'll never see it, but I said, this is too much. Like, I can't defend this. So done with Hulk Hogan. He's out of my brain. I'll still love 80s Hogan, but I can no longer support him. And that's my bit. That's all I got with those things. Mm. So, if you want to jump into WrestleMania, you want to just jump into WrestleMania?
Yeah, we can. So, I have it pulled up. I have the card in order. I figured that it would... typically, we kind of bounce around when we do these like pay-per-view reviews of like, oh, this is what we like. This is what we want to talk about. But I feel like there's so much... There were 16 matches total.
Well, it's the only WrestleMania too big for one night.
Or not... It was supposed to... It was 18 matches... including the two pre-show matches, but it turns out there was a surprise 19th match that happened.
Oh.
So, well, let's just go in order, starting with night one. So, I know you watched night two.
Yeah.
Did you go back and rewatch any of night one?
I watched bits and pieces. I didn't watch it all the way through, but I did watch bits and pieces because I wanted to be prepared to talk about it tonight. And I wasn't going to watch WrestleMania at all. And I think we should mention from the beginning that we said it earlier that this was the weirdest WrestleMania. It was the weirdest WrestleMania on so many levels. This was the first WrestleMania in I don't know how many years that we all didn't watch it as a group. This is the first WrestleMania that our group is no longer complete, because there are people gone. This is the first WrestleMania where there was no crowd. And watching these guys perform in silence is maybe one of the most awkward things I have ever seen. They did a go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, because, you know, you talk about this. This isn't just the first WrestleMania we haven't seen as a group. This is the first, like, I think this is the first pay-per-view we haven't done, just in general.
At least,
WrestleMania has the extra kind of, meaning to me for you all, because, like, that was the first show you invited me to hang out with.
Right.
When we first started to become friends.
Yeah, this is by far the weirdest wrestling show of all time. And to think that we're here, as opposed to where we were last WrestleMania, it's a shock to the system. I've said it a couple times, everything that's happening in the world and personally and with the group, it's like, this is just a surreal nightmare that you constantly expect to wake up from, but every day you get up and it's still the same thing. And there are some parts of it I'm having a hard time accepting. Mm-hmm. And WrestleMania is one of them. I didn't want to watch it because I didn't want to experience it in such a hollow way without my friends, without special people here with me.
That's part of why I did it on Twitch. Why I did that. I set up that watch along. Is because, you know, yeah, we'd have, like, the group chat that, you know, whoever happened to be watching would be in. Like, Connor was in there, Dalton was in there, you were in there on night two. But, like, it's like, man, I don't want to watch wrestling by myself.
Right.
So, also, thank you, because I know several of the people that were in the chat are going to be listening to this. Thank you guys for coming in. That was a ton of fun. We may end up doing it for Money in the Bank, too, determining, you know, because they're still going on with Money in the Bank, apparently. They were airing ads for it. It's in May. Whether or not it'll have to be pre-recorded like WrestleMania was or what. But we might be, if everything's better, which, man, at this point, I don't know how it can be by May.
Right.
If we all get together at the store again, I won't be streaming. But, you know, if we're still kind of social distancing, then I might set up something like that again. Maybe I'll have a better background than what I had set up.
I'm hopeful for May because, you know, not to get too off topic of wrestling, but the models are predicting less deaths, which is great. Like, it went from 100,000 to 200,000 to 80,000 to 60,000 today. So, and I'm not saying 60,000 people dying is good. Obviously, it's not. But
I mean, compared to 200,000.
Right, right. So I'm hopeful that if people, you know, keep their minds in together and don't go insane and don't risk each other's lives, that may maybe stretching, but at some point in the future, maybe by June, we can get back to being relatively normal. Because wrestling, like, I watched WrestleMania with Lindsay. We watched it together for the most part. She left, I believe, right before the Firefly Funhouse match. She got a phone call, and
that's probably for the best. for her. Like, what? It was amazing, but I feel like I can hear her watching that and being like, "What the hell was that?"
She was like that about the whole show because she doesn't watch wrestling, so she has no idea who half these people are or what they're doing. And to be fair, I didn't know half of it because I haven't watched in a while. So, but I wanted to, once night one happened and everyone was talking about how amazing the Boneyard match was, I wanted to watch night two because I wanted to see what they would do with the Firefly Funhouse.
And I did that too, all the time.
We'll get to it here in a little bit, but it was definitely a trip. Anyway, let's go from the top.
So night one, dark match, the pre-show matchup was Cesaro defeated Drew Gulak. I keep wanting to say Gru Julak, and that's way off.
That sounds very offensive.
It does. But Cesaro picked up the win. I think it was clean. I'm pretty sure it was clean. He used the no-handed airplane spin.
Yes.
And that was enough to pin Drew Gulak. But it was a fun little match. It was pretty short. Wikipedia has it at 4 minutes and 25 seconds. And it was good. I enjoyed it.
I also liked it. I thought it was a fun little romp.
The kickoff match was the first match, official match of WrestleMania, was Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross challenging for the WWE Women's Tag Team Championship, going up against the Kabuki Warriors, Asuka, Kairi Sane. Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross got the win. They are the new Women's Tag Team Champions. This is like the, and they are now two-time Women's Tag Team Champions. I completely forgot about their first run entirely. The WWE has entirely dropped the ball with the Women's Tag Team Division.
Oh, yeah.
In general, especially the championships.
Which is a shame because I really like the Kabuki Warriors. I still hate the name. Even I don't care what the situation with the name is. If they picked it or whoever picked it, it's still a terrible name.
At least Kairi Sane looks like she changed her look to fit it. Like her and Asuka right. adapted their looks, and it's no longer, you know, the pirate princess
right.
and Asuka. Like they have a cohesive look. They have
it's a good look
together. They've become a real team.
And it's a good look. Like I really like them as a team. That's why I'm kind of sad that they took the belts off and put them on Nikki and Alexa. And I appreciate the fact that at least Alexa and Nikki have they have history and they have a story for why they're together. They weren't just like slapped together and won the titles. But I still feel like they really missed the ball on the Kabuki Warriors. And I think a lot of people would probably agree with me on that.
And I'm not nearly as interested in the Alexa Bliss Nikki Cross story now that Alexa Bliss is just her friend. That was way more interesting to me whenever it was Alexa's manipulating Nikki and using her.
Right.
And ever since they moved away from that, it just kind of lost interest for me.
I agree.
Overall, this was a solid match. I thought it went a little long, but it was a solid way of setting the pace for what the rest of the night would be.
Go ahead.
Just because, you know, it kind of showed you a little bit of... you can tell who was prepared to wrestle in front of nobody
mm-hmm.
and who wanted to use that to their advantage.
Yeah.
Because we'll get to a match later on that I thought did a fantastic job of that, whereas this was kind of just a standard, it was just a match, and it was kind of jarring having it be in front of no people.
And I feel bad, especially on a situation like a title change or some of the big storylines we'll talk about later, when you have a title change, you have this WrestleMania moment in front of no crowd. Mm-hmm. I feel bad for the performers because you can tell they're really working out there and they're doing the best they can. But we, you know, Hunter tagged me in this a while back that I always say what he said, that the worst part about wrestling is the fans. And in a lot of cases, that's absolutely true. But, you know, when you have no fans there, man, wrestling really feeds off that energy. So when you don't have the fans there, even when you have important moments, it just feels so hollow. And I think that mm-hmm. is the best way to describe 2020 right now, is everything just feels hollow.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I already lost my page. There we go. Next match was Elias defeated King Corbin. King Corbin was under the impression he would get a win by forfeit because they reenacted the Lion King on SmackDown 2 weeks ago. But Elias came out. They gave him new music, and I'm very mad about it. His original theme, I think it was just called Drifter.
Yeah.
Or I don't remember it, but it was really, really good, and now it's gone. But this was another match. It was fine. You could kind of tell that they started to stretch once they decided to go to two nights, because there's no way this would have been a
WrestleMania match.
This was a solid No Mercy or, you know, Backlash match.
Right.
But for WrestleMania, no crowd already makes it feel detrimental. This kind of felt, you know, I like both of these guys a lot. I would say I like Elias and King Corbin more than the average person does. But this there wasn't anything necessarily wrong with this match. There just wasn't anything special about it.
And I'm average wrestling fan today, and mm-hmm. I don't care about either of them or this match. Like, and mm-hmm. maybe it's because I haven't kept up with it so much. I do like Elias and Baron Corbin, but WWE has tried so hard to make me not care about them.
They've at least been like, this is an established story. This isn't like Aleister Black and Bobby Lashley, where it was literally just like 1 week build. They've been working on this for, I think, a couple months at this point, if not one minimum. So it was going to happen. This confrontation was going to happen. I just, for me, this is one of the times that it didn't feel like WrestleMania.
Right. Yeah.
Becky Lynch defeated Shayna Baszler to retain the Raw Women's Championship.
What a mistake.
Just shrug emoji. Like,
yeah.
On the one hand, I feel like Shayna Baszler's probably going to be the one to take it off of her eventually. My least favorite part, I think, is the fact that Becky Lynch beat her like everybody beats Shayna Baszler, where they roll through the Karafuna clutch.
Well, we would call that in my day, we would call that well scouted. You know,
I mean, yeah, but it's. It's just the fact that the biggest complaint that I see for Shayna Baszler is everything she does is the same. Like, all of her matches are the same.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand that. Like, again, I know I like Baszler a lot more than you do.
Oh, I don't like her at all. You know,
to have her, do the same match and lose the same way
yeah.
is just... kind of baffling.
With Shayna Baszler in this, I kind of feel like how I felt about Nia Jax. I was never a fan of Nia Jax, but I recognize what they were trying to do with her. And when you have the opportunity to push them like that and you pull back on it, it just hurt Nia Jax, and it made me, what little I cared about her, I cared about her even less. Same thing with Shayna Baszler. I don't like Shayna Baszler. I think she's boring. Like, I'm not a fan. And that's just my personal opinion. I'm not saying I'm right. But in this situation, Shayna Baszler absolutely had to beat Becky Lynch. And the fact that she didn't beat Becky Lynch is just a giant question mark. Apparently, Vince McMahon wanted more happy endings because of how terrible the world is right now. And I get that, but like, that's not, it shouldn't come at the cost of good storytelling. And you dropped the ball with this. Shayna Baszler should have beat Becky Lynch, and you could have set up a Becky Lynch redemption story where she was too confident, too arrogant, and the man is it's Sylvester Stallone in Rocky. He gets knocked down. Apollo Creed whoops him in the first movie, but he comes back in the second movie and beats him. You know, there has to be a good story. And now, what do you do with Shayna Baszler? I agree with you. She's going to come back and win, but here comes that word again. It feels hollow.
I think when she does come back, this is where they bring in Jessamyn Duke and Marina Shafir. And they kind of set up a pseudo horsewomen thing.
And maybe even Ronda Rousey. You never know.
Yeah, potentially. Let's see. Otherwise, it was a solid match. It was just, it felt familiar, which is a bummer because I was, despite how they've handled Baszler on the main roster so far, I was looking forward to this match. It kind of was underwhelming for me.
Yeah, I agree.
Sami Zayn defeated Daniel Bryan to retain the WWE Intercontinental Championship. I enjoyed this top to bottom. I liked Gulak and Cesaro and Nakamura at ringside. I liked the story that they told. I loved Sami Zayn's confidence. I loved him talking about, you know, no, Bryan's not going to touch me. And, you know, so you did really, really want to see Bryan get his hands on Sami. Mm-hmm. This is the one that I think hurt having no audience the most, just because we know how beloved Daniel Bryan is.
Yeah.
And
you need that energy.
To have Sam, I don't think the WrestleMania crowd would have booed Sammy necessarily, but I think they would have played along. I think they would have done whatever they could to, you know, fire up Daniel Bryan, and they would have reacted huge to Sammy getting away and Bryan finally getting his hands on him.
I agree.
But I thought the finish was interesting. But it was also a little confusing because Daniel Bryan came off the top rope and Sami Zayn hit him with the big boot. But the announcers, or Michael Cole, I guess, he called it the Helluva kick, like a modified Helluva kick. But it's just a big boot. It was a standing big boot. So, you know, they tried to make it to where it was the finisher. If they could have figured out a way to turn it into a Blue Thunderbomb or something, I think that would have been more surprising. But overall, I enjoyed this match a lot. I like both of these guys, and I really hope this story isn't over.
And that reminds me of something that I noticed through both nights, and it was one of the most awkward and jarring things. It was a huge reminder of the situation that we're in right now, and that was whenever they would show like replays.
You could hear the announcers in the
background. You could hear the commentators in the background, and it was the weirdest thing because it must have been so quiet in those arenas.
I actually liked that because you and I know firsthand, doing commentary pre-recorded is hard.
Yes.
It's weird. You don't have the energy of the crowd. You don't have, you know, there's nothing to really feed off of. This is so close to that, I think. Because, like, I've done commentary where the crowd is being silent, and I hate it. Because yeah. I don't want to be the, you know, I don't, but I think I would like this a little bit more because then I would like, oh no, it doesn't matter. The crowd, there's no crowd to judge the things that I'm saying. But like,
well not live anyway.
It gave kind of a cool feeling because like when a big moment happened and Cole especially reacted really big, you could hear him echo.
Yeah.
Not even in the replays, just in the matches themselves, like a big spot happens, you can hear him echo. And I thought that almost kind of, I mean, yes, of course, it's not going to make up for the total lack of crowd noise, but I thought it added a little bit of that energy.
And at least it was different. I mean, it felt different. And this, I mean, yeah. That's what this WrestleMania was different. So,
let's see. The WWE SmackDown Tag Team Championships was defended in a triple threat ladder match. However, it was only three people in the match. John Morrison retained over Jimmy Uso and Kofi Kingston, representing the Usos and the New Day, respectively. And this was a fun match. this is the first time I think in the night. No, it was there for Sammy and Daniel too, and to be fair, Becky and Shayna as well. But this was the first time that I remember laughing at something that the wrestlers said to each other.
What was it?
Jimmy saying something to Kofi about, you know, I'm going to put it in your face like a pancake. Or just like they were talking shit to each other through the match. I enjoyed that. You know, it's not something that you really see a lot of. This was a fun ladder match, I thought. And I thought the finish, I would have liked the finish more if someone on Reddit hadn't just like the week before posted the, hey, remember when Dolph Ziggler won the Intercontinental Championship because Swagger and Kofi were fighting over the belt and it dropped and he picked it up off the ground?
Yeah.
This was kind of the equivalent of that. Kofi and Jimmy both had the, and it's crazy that Kofi was involved in both of these. Kofi and Jimmy brought down the thing holding the titles and they were, you know, fighting over who would hold on to it, where Morrison actually removed the belts and dropped off and landed with the belts. So that meant he retained the belts for him and Miz.
I felt so bad for them because you're doing, I mean, there were a lot of high spots in this and a lot of crazy spots, and to do it in front of no crowd, again, that's just, I've never performed in front of no crowd. When I first started performing, it felt like there was no crowd because I didn't get a reaction, but at least you knew there were people there. I can't imagine going out there and cutting a promo in front of no crowd, much less doing spots off ladders and not having the crowd jazz you up. I mean, that is such a surreal scenario that we witness. And to be honest, I hope we never, ever see anything like this again.
Once we get to the Boneyard match, I'm going to disagree with you.
I could see that.
Kevin Owens. Well, this is weird. Technically, there were two matches. Kevin Owens defeated Seth Rollins via disqualification, and then the match was restarted, and Kevin Owens defeated Seth Rollins via pinfall.
And it was fine. I like both those guys. I love the Monday Night Messiah. I've always been a fan of Kevin Owens once he became Kevin Owens. I wasn't huge when he was I don't even remember his name before Kevin Owens at this point. What was
Kevin
it?
Steen.
Kevin Steen. I remember saying when he came in, he's going to hurt someone one of these days with those moves he does. And I was completely wrong. Kevin Owens has been fantastic. He's been safe. I eat crow on that. I admit when I'm wrong. I was glad to see him pick up the win here.
Yeah, I loved this match.
Twice.
Of the stuff that happened in the Performance Center, in the ring, I think this is probably my favorite match of the night. Because this is the match I was talking about earlier. These guys were running their mouths nonstop. And it was personal, and it was relevant to the feud, and it was believable. This, despite everything that wrestling is, this felt like a fight to me. This felt like two people that hated each other.
Which is what wrestling should be. I mean, it should be, I want to win gold, or I hate you.
Yeah, and the idea that, on the one hand, I hated the original finish of Seth Rollins winning or losing by disqualification. Yeah. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized it fit. Rollins has excelled at WrestleMania. The heist of the century was at WrestleMania. And for him to hit Owens with the bell blatantly, to like, he doesn't care if he loses at WrestleMania. He's had his WrestleMania moment. The last couple weeks of this story has been about Owens wanting his WrestleMania moment because he has been historically very unsuccessful at WrestleMania. And so for Rollins to be like, you know what, screw it, I'll take the L because it means I rob you of your moment, I actually ended up loving that. And that was a roller coaster of emotions I had in the time that Rollins went up the ramp and Owens challenged him to restart the match, which he did. And then the stuff they did after, Owens jumping off of the WrestleMania sign through the announce table was super cool. And this was a good moment for Owens. I don't think Rollins loses anything losing here. I'm very curious to see where they go from here with him, because Razor, I believe, is the one who is out with an injury. So where, you know, I don't think he'll be next in line to face the winner of the WWE title match, which we'll get to here in a little bit. But I'm curious to see what's next for Rollins.
I'm curious to just see what's next for everybody at this point.
Yeah, well, I mean, Monday didn't give us a great taste of things to come, so.
Yeah.
Probably the most surprising moment of the night, at least for me, Braun Strowman pins Goldberg to become the new WWE Universal Championship, or to become the new Universal Champion, excuse me. He won the Universal Championship.
I genuinely
expected this to be gold. Like, this match was exactly what I thought it was going to be, except I thought it would be flipped.
Strowman would come out strong, and then Goldberg would kind of...
Strowman comes out strong, eats a spear. There's no way Goldberg's hitting a jackhammer on him. But, you know, he eats a couple spears, and Goldberg retains to hold over until we get the Roman Reigns match. And then he drops it to Roman.
I personally, especially once I saw what happened with Drew McIntyre and Brock Lesnar, I absolutely hated this match. I hated the booking. I always hate that booking. I hate when a guy takes five finishers. Like, I can't stand it. I hate when you, like, you make Goldberg's spear look like, you know, I'm trying not to curse anymore. I'm trying to become a better person. But you make Goldberg's spear look like shit. Mm-hmm. And Strowman, you know, I'm not a big fan of Strowman, especially in light of recent comments he's made.
Man, if he just wouldn't have typed out that paragraph, I would have been so happy. And now I'm just like, ah, cool, whatever.
Same. And I'm actually excited for when Roman Reigns takes it off of him. Goodbye, Goldberg. Thanks for coming back. Congratulations. You didn't embarrass yourself. I mean, whatever. I like Goldberg, mm-hmm. but...
I liked that they showed his locker room, and it was clearly just the conference room that we saw the next night.
Yeah.
It was the same door. They just slapped the Goldberg logo on it.
This was an incredibly lazy match. It was an incredibly uninspired match. This was cookie cutter every Goldberg match. I mean, like, I was disappointed on this on every level. And if they had ended the night with this instead of the Boneyard match, like they did the next night with Drew, mm-hmm. I think this would have soured WrestleMania almost immediately. But thank God they didn't.
Yeah, it was what it was. That this is the matches they like to tell for. And now that we have, Strowman is capable of more. McIntyre is capable of much more. We know. So I'm excited for the main world titles on Raw and SmackDown to both be on guys who can, in fairness, Brock is capable of more. That's just not the story they want to tell. Right. So now that you know, their championships are on. People who aren't these like unstoppable monsters, which is insane to think about. We're talking about Braun Strowman and Drew McIntyre when I say that sentence.
Right.
I think we're going to be back to getting like some very world class traditional wrestling matches for our world championships again, and I'm very happy about that.
I certainly hope so. I'm excited for change.
Yeah, this was literally nothing but finishers for 2 minutes and 10 seconds.
Depressing.
And then the main event of the night, the highlight of. Arguably the weekend, I think it's safe to say, The Undertaker defeats AJ Styles in the Boneyard match. And I know this isn't traditionally your cup of tea, this style of match, but I, from top to bottom, I loved it. I loved AJ trolling people coming in the coffin, in the hearse.
I like that too.
Biker Taker coming, you know, on the motorcycle. It should have been Limp Bizkit instead of Metallica, but you
absolutely.
Know, I'll take what I can get. And I thought this was so much fun. It was unlike anything we've seen in WWE before, at least to this quality. Because, like, they did the, what did they call it when it was Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt?
See, I've been trying to figure that out, too, because it wasn't the Wyatt compound match, because that was the tag team match. I can't remember. I've been trying to remember for the past couple of days, and I cannot remember because I know exactly the match you're talking about, and it was terrible.
Like, they've done stuff like this before, but this one you can really tell, like, the best way that I've seen it put, and I'm going to butcher it because I don't remember the exact wording of the tweet, but it was WrestleMania was main evented by AJ Styles in a pre-recorded... It was a pre-recorded spectacle match, shot like a movie, main evented by AJ Styles, produced by Jeremy Borash. TNA won the war.
It was cinematic as hell. And
cinematic match. I couldn't think of that was the word I was looking for. A cinematic match, main evented by AJ Styles, produced by Jeremy Borash. TNA won.
I'm going to channel Jim Cornette again, and I'm so sorry. But I listened to his review of it, and I agreed for the most part. He said it was amazing, it was spectacular, but it's hard to gauge it as a wrestling match because it was a traditional wrestling match. And that's exactly how I felt about it. From a spectacle point of view, I loved it. I thought it was incredible.
But this wasn't a wrestling match. This was never going to be a wrestling match. It wasn't billed as a wrestling match. It was Boneyard match. Also, the match we were trying to think of is the House of Horrors match.
House of Horrors, that's what it was. Terrible. Yep. But what I mean more is that you put this on the same show as, you know, the rest of the card were traditional wrestling matches. And then you have this. So when I'm grading WrestleMania, and I'm an old school wrestling fan, so I like wrestling to be wrestling. So I went into this expecting to hate it. And I'm not going to say I loved it, because I am more of a traditionalist and a purist when it comes to wrestling, but I respect it. And I didn't hate it. I thought it was incredibly well filmed. It was a ton of fun. There were things that just as a purist, and I hate to throw that term around because I don't want to sound like an old bastard, but...
You don't want to sound like an elitist.
I don't want to sound like an elitist. I don't want to sound like Jim Cornette where I hate everything that's not traditional, because I don't hate everything that's not traditional, but things like The Undertaker teleporting behind AJ Styles, stuff like that. I will always hate those things because I separate movies from wrestling. Wrestling to me has always been a sport.
Did you hate that in the the 80s, but like especially in the 90s, like when The Undertaker was presented as this supernatural, like the Phenom?
No, because as I grew up, I think my taste changed. When I was a kid and growing up in the 80s, late 80s, and I saw the Hogan stuff and Papa Shango making people throw up and, you know, stuff like that, I was young enough that it didn't register that it was, you know, cartoony and fake. When the Attitude Era came around and The Undertaker was presented as the Phenom, I didn't care because I had just gotten back into wrestling and I still wasn't, I guess, an elitist. I wasn't as elitist as I was. But it's really in the past couple of years, probably the past 5, 6, 7 years, that I've come to appreciate wrestling more as a sport and a combat sport. So when I see stuff like that now, if I go back and watch stuff like that, I cringe a little bit. But I'm trying to get out of that mindset because, you know, it's 2020, and 2020 has slapped me in the face and said, everything that you thought you knew is wrong. So I'm trying to adjust and be more open to these things. That's why I went into this match expecting to hate it, and I didn't hate it. I thought it was really good. I thought it was a fantastic. I probably had more of a problem with the Firefly Funhouse match, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. But this was just a cinematic marvel. Well filmed, well acted, a lot of fun. As a wrestling match, it's like Matt Hardy and his Broken Universe stuff. Like, I appreciate it, but I don't know. It's still an itchy spot on me. But I did like it. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, no, I loved it, top to bottom. This was my favorite thing of the night. This was top two of the weekend.
I think you're going to be surprised when I tell you what my favorite match of the weekend was.
And I just, this was, it, I loved it. It was unique. It stood out. It helped protect The Undertaker.
Oh, yeah.
One of my friends messaged me this morning, and she was like, do you think The Undertaker's actually retiring? And I said, there's no way. Until he's dead or in the Hall of Fame, I will never believe I've seen the last of The Undertaker. Because I think he's going to have at least one match in front of a crowd. But doing stuff like this, the cinematic stuff, this adds on to his career.
Yeah,
because he can do this, you know, way more. I know this was apparently like a full 8-hour day of shooting to get this done, but I loved it. It was they could reshoot stuff that they needed to reshoot. I loved the trash talk again between the two. Like, this felt, despite, you know, all of the supernatural stuff and like the druids and Undertaker teleporting and seemingly healing himself, going from sounding like he was about to die.
Yeah,
like hearing him just gasp for air. To, you know, when he was behind AJ, which I'm loving all the memes coming out of that too.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. I hated that it was
I loved it, and I think that this can, for better or worse, this can lengthen how much time Taker has left.
I think it would have worked better if it wasn't the American Badass, though. If it was the more supernatural version of The Undertaker, only because of what he did in the match. It makes more sense to have the Phenom be the one teleporting around and recovering and stuff. But at the same time, it was just cool seeing him ride in on the motorcycle. I mean, there was so much about this match. There was so much to take in from this match. And if you haven't seen it, whether you like the cinematic wrestling or not, I think it's well worth checking out.
Yeah, absolutely. AJ Styles is great in it. the Gallows and Anderson are fun in it as well for the little bit that they're given. Just I can't say enough about how much I love this match. But we have a whole other night of WrestleMania.
But I do want to
still night
I do,
two.
I do want to point out that I think this match, this is the match that made WrestleMania WrestleMania. If it wasn't for this match,
yeah,
WrestleMania 30 was it 36?
36.
WrestleMania 36 would have been a footnote. It would have been that WrestleMania that was during the coronavirus. But because of the Boneyard match, and even the Firefly match, to be fair, but I didn't like it as much. But this really made WrestleMania feel special.
Yeah, absolutely. Pre-show match for WrestleMania, Liv Morgan defeated Natalya. Natalya was wrestling as a heel. I don't know if that turn actually happened or what, but that was weird. But it was a nice surprising win for Liv Morgan. That makes me happy.
That's all I cared about was Liv Morgan won. I remember, when we watched WrestleMania, I've been on a health kick lately, and I've been eating so well. I've been eating fruits all day, and I've been working out every single day. Like I said, I'm really retraining my body and my mind. But in this particular night, I wanted to reward myself, and I talked to my personal trainer, and he gave me a thumbs up. So I ordered the Big Dipper pizza from Pizza Hut, and Lindsay and I split it. So I'm eating it while we're watching this match. And I was, for about 5 to 30 seconds, I was in actual heaven because I was eating this delicious pizza and Liv Morgan won. And I'm like, this is awesome because I love Liv Morgan. She's one of my favorites. So very, very happy to see her pick up the victory here.
One of the best night matches of the weekend, I think. Charlotte Flair defeated Rhea Ripley to become the NXT Women's Champion. I loved this match. I thought it was a great match. I don't have as big of a problem with Charlotte winning as a lot of people I know did. I thought this would have been a good opportunity for Ripley to really establish herself, but yeah. She was already the one that took the belt off of Baszler, so I genuinely don't think she lost a whole lot by losing this match. And plus, this separates Charlotte and Becky. You know, this is Charlotte seemingly now going to be on NXT. Even though, from what we've seen later and since, I was really hoping Bianca Belair would be the one to take it off of Charlotte, but it doesn't look like we're gonna get that.
I'm so torn on this match because I thought it was an incredible match too. Since I didn't get to see night one during night one, this was my first night of watching. And even though I loved Liv winning, I thought this match was absolutely incredible. There was a lot of passion in it. I mean, it was violent. It was a good wrestling match. But I hated that Charlotte won because I'm so over Charlotte Flair, and I have been for a long time. And I get promoting her as the biggest thing in women's wrestling. I mean, that's what you do when you create dynasties. But I thought Rhea Ripley needed it more. I thought there's so much upside to her, and we already know what the upside is to Charlotte. So I'm curious to see what they do with Rhea now. I didn't like the finish. I didn't like that she lost, but the match was great.
Yeah, great match. Aleister Black defeated Bobby Lashley.
This is my match of the night.
Is it really?
It is. I legitimately love this match, and I didn't think I would because I didn't care about it. I didn't think that it clearly had no storyline, but sometimes you forget how good Bobby Lashley is, and Aleister Black is incredible. And I remember watching this match just going like, I love this match. Like, I really think this is good.
It was a good match. It just had no build to it. Austin Lane was actually in my Twitch chat while we were watching this, and he was just like, this is my popcorn match because there's no heat to it and there's no crowd there to make the at-home audience invested. I also real quick want to apologize I'm hoping it's going to get mixed down when we normalize it.
It will not.
But one of the cats is desperately trying to get in.
Yeah, I so can hear
hearing,
it.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're hearing meowing and like banging on the door, it's that.
Welcome to the new era of podcasting.
Yeah, working from home.
Yeah.
So, no, I mean, it was a good match. I'm a big fan of both of these guys. I love Aleister Black. I think what they've done with Lashley so far has been criminal.
Yeah. Disappointing at best, for sure.
Yeah, so I also kind of, on the one hand, we were kind of talking about this in the Twitch chat. On the one hand, if they're going to split Lashley from Lana, okay, whatever. Because, you know, she told him to, you know, no, don't use the Dominator, use the spear. And that's what led to him losing. But at the same time, if we had to sit through what felt like a decade of that god-awful Rusev, Lana, Lashley, Liv Morgan BS,
yeah,
it better have counted. I want it to mean something, so keep Lana and Lashley together for the long haul.
I don't know. I liked what happened on Monday. That's all.
But
I'm
fine with Lashley ditching Lana if it means we get MVP back as his mouthpiece, because Lashley and MVP's impact work was incredible. And if we get, you know, I don't care if it's a knockoff, I don't care if it's a repeat, it was better than what you're doing now. So just go ahead and give that to me.
Agreed.
What arguably, if it wasn't for the Firefly Funhouse and the main event, this was one of the best moments of the weekend, I think. Otis defeated Dolph Ziggler after Mandy Rose comes down. She lays out Sonya Deville. She low blows Ziggler. Yeah. Otis hits the Caterpillar, gets the win, gets the girl. All is right in the universe for just a little bit.
This was the most disappointing thing for me all weekend. And not because they did it wrong. They did it right. The fact that this could not happen in front of, you know, 80,000 people, it was criminal.
This and the main event both, I feel like, are really... Well, this and the next match and the main event. Like, this... I think this night had more of what we... The first night, other than, like, the ladder match and potentially maybe... Owens and Rollins, because Owens wanted to jump off of the actual pirate ship that was from the original set. Like, the first night, it was like, okay, yeah, it's a bummer there's no crowd, but there's really nothing here that you could recognize absolutely requires the crowd. Like, if it has to be pre-taped, it is what it is. But you're right, like, the night two, between the Otis moment, the Last Man Standing match, Drew's big win, so much of that would have been infinitely better with the crowd there.
I was thinking when Mandy's music hit and she came out and laid out Sonya and then low-blowed Dolph, and then especially after the fact when Otis kissed her, I thought this would have been the defining moment for them, and this would have started something. Yeah, it would have started something incredible, and I felt so bad for them that they had to do this in front of no crowd. I was cheering because I was thinking, I was thinking, please don't do that thing where you double turn or something and you think that he's going to get the girl and then turns out she's in cahoots with them the whole time or something.
Eve Torres's him.
Yeah, when she kissed him, and like, I was so happy. Like, I legitimately had a tear in my eye. It was absolutely fantastic. And damn it, I wish this would have happened in front of a crowd.
We were losing our minds in the chat. It was so much fun. So the match itself was solid. Like, Otis can go. Ziggler is, you know, one of the most underutilized stars that they've ever had on their roster.
And I do want to mention, because I don't think I've said it since it happened, personal friend, I have his phone number. We text each other. That's a legit thing, by the way.
You guys are buds.
We are, and that is the weirdest thing to say. I want to be buds with Otis, though, because then maybe I could be buds with Mandy, because I still have a crush on Mandy.
Otis is perfect. And he's really, if Mandy's going to be with anyone, Otis is the correct choice.
I agree. Keep these guys together for a while. Like, there is so much potential in this. Don't blow it.
Next match was the Last Man Standing match. Edge, first match, 9 years, defeating Randy Orton. Both men putting on just an absolute clinic when it comes to promos in front of a crowd, pre-taped, backstage, whatever it was. These guys were on fire for weeks leading up to this match, and this is one of my biggest disappointments.
Me too, kind of. And, you know, it's funny that Edge has been gone for 9 years, because I think this match was almost 7 or 8 years. it's a joke, of course. I don't know, man. I was watching this match while I was texting people, and I thought it was a great match, but it was too long, and the fact that there was no crowd hurt it a lot.
It breaks my heart that Edge's first match back in 9 years couldn't be in front of an audience. Like, that's, you know, everyone says, you know, you don't deserve anything in pro wrestling. You don't deserve anything in life. Edge deserved to have a return. Like, I mean, he got the Royal Rumble, which is, you know, better than nothing. But, like, he deserved his first one-on-one match to be in front of an audience. Well, that said, I don't think it was this match. It went on way too long. Parts of it were too jokey. The Last Man Standing format as a whole is kind of a bummer, because no one ever gets up at 3.
Right.
It's always, they have to drag it out to 8 or 9 every single time. It totally derails the pacing of the match. You know, this ultimately, I was disappointed in this. It wasn't a bad match necessarily.
No, it was a good brawl, but it was 36 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, I can only watch a pre-taped you know, brawl that I know is not real for so long. At 36 minutes is way too long.
It was the Roddy Piper fight and It Lives, but just stretched out.
This was like the Hollywood Backlot Brawl or whatever that they had with Goldust and Roddy Piper, except instead of like cutting it into other matches and going back to it constantly, it was just one long full version. Mm-hmm. It was too much, and like it's super disappointing. You thought that Edge at Royal Rumble, when they missed his first spear, was going to be the worst thing that could happen to him in his comeback. Well, we have a new winner, and it's the fact that he went 36 minutes in front of no crowd. It's unfortunate. It's depressing as hell, but welcome to 2020.
And it was brutal like it needed to be. It felt personal. It felt heated. You know, they did that correctly.
Especially the end.
Yeah.
For sure. When he hit the spear, I think it was a spear, and he started to count, and then he pushed the ref, and I think he dropped the F word too. I mean, it was pre-taped, obviously, but and he said, you know, don't count. And I knew he was going to do the concerto. Like I knew that was going to be the finish, but the way they executed it was extremely well done. And even though the match went on too long, I feel like Edge's victory was well deserved, and it was a good finish. It was a good visual. So disappointing, yes, but I felt like it was good enough that I didn't hate.
I feel like I'm being overly critical because it's not like I know Hunter put in the group chat that's like one of the people that he goes to for like reviews and stuff gave it a 1.
Yeah.
Like 1 out of 5. And I think that's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
But it wasn't what I hoped, what it could have been. It feels like it, you know, if they had condensed some things, it would have flowed a little bit better. And also, yeah, you know, instead of a last man standing match, make it a falls count anywhere match.
Yeah.
Because then you can have them refusing to go for the cover, or, you know, Randy, or, you know, instead of him, you know, shoving the referee away, if he did the thing where he pulls the shoulder up, he's like, nope, not this way.
Right. Yeah. So unfortunate, but I mean, I think it got the job done. I would probably give it, if I was going to go on a 1 to 5 rating, I would probably say 3 out of 5, maybe 2.5 out of 5, just because of the length.
Yeah. Let's see. The Street Profits successfully defended the Raw Tag Team Championships against the team of Angel Garza and Austin Theory.
Which was insane. Like, I didn't expect them to win against this team that was thrown together in the past week at WrestleMania.
Honestly, the biggest story of this was Bianca Belair coming out to take on Zelina Vega.
Yes.
After the match. And the Montez Ford, Bianca Belair pairing, I am here for. I love them as a couple. They're married in real life, of course. Their social media stuff together is great. And this is great. I'm such a huge fan of Montez Ford.
Oh, I know.
I've said it before. I'll say it again. That is a future WWE champion.
Yeah.
Like, he has all of the makings of a future main event face of a company.
I hate that you guys had to explain to me what EST meant, because I legit did not know.
Yeah. Bad.
I'm so sorry.
Greatest, fastest, strongest. Greatest. So Bianca That's Belair coming out now, looks like it's, and if her joining the Street Profits means that they're not going to do those backstage skits anymore, I will love her even more than I already do.
Because I'm not really sold on the Street Profits. I do like Ford, and I even like the other guy. Was it Dawkins?
Angelo Dawkins.
Yeah, I like him. I don't understand the spinning he does.
The bowl.
Every
Are you
time
doing a bit? Are you doing a bit? Because like
it drives me crazy.
You're repeating all the stuff that I say. I feel like you're making fun of me.
No, I'm dead serious. Every time I see him, every time I see him do that little spin, I go, "That's stupid. Stop doing that."
Oh, do you mean the spin as like his splash?
Yeah.
In the corner. Oh, okay, I thought you meant the bowl.
No. I hate when he does the splash in the corner. No. It's like, because it's so slow. It's not like it's like super fast and impressive looking. It's just like if some big dude spun before he hit someone, it just looks stupid.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Anywho.
Bayley defended her SmackDown Women's Championship in a 5-way elimination match. Tamina was out first after everybody piled on top of her to get the pin. Naomi was next eliminated by Sasha Banks. She got, she tapped her out to the bank statement. And then that's when the match really, really got interesting, because it came down to Bayley's best friend, Sasha Banks, and Lacey Evans. It was a 2-on-1 predicament. Lacey pulled Sasha in the way. Bayley kneed Sasha to the outside. Then they started to argue and fight because Sasha was like, "You're my best friend. I've always been there for you. Why would you do this to me?" Bayley's trying to explain it was an accident. Lacey comes at Sasha, and Bailey pushes her out of the way, but it wasn't enough. It's still Lacey hit the women's right on Sasha, knocked her out. Then it comes down to the one-on-one match, Lacey versus Bailey, and then Sasha comes in, attacks Lacey Evans. It's no DQ. It's totally legal, allowing Bailey to retain. And I loved that. I like this is a great run for Bailey. I love her as a heel. I love her dynamic with Sasha Banks. The tease for weeks of Sasha has now been added to this championship match. Does her loyalties lie with Bailey or to the women's championship? And this, I thought this was very, very well done, and it leaves a lot of room that they can continue to work with here.
I agree.
Plus, the match itself was really good.
I agree on all accounts. I thought it was really good. The only thing I hated about it was that moment where Sasha was like, how could you do this to me? I've always been there for you. Because it was clearly an accident. Like, I felt that was a little forced because they were trying to get to the end where,
yeah, but that,
you know,
always happens in wrestling. Like, it's always the, you know, no one, there are no such thing as accidents in a wrestling ring, apparently.
And I can forgive that. I thought everyone in this match looked really good. I absolutely love Naomi. I don't hate Tamina. She's whatever. I'm actually a pretty big fan of Lacey Evans. I don't know how many people are. And I thought Lacey Evans looked really good in this match. I thought everyone ended up looking really good. And I'm interested to see where they go with it.
Yeah, if Naomi wasn't going to win, like, I still think this should have been Naomi versus Bayley one-on-one. And then Naomi should have won it. But, you know, if they're not, they clearly weren't going that route, I'm fine with Bayley retaining.
Yeah, and good on her for someone that everyone kind of wrote off at one point, you know? So I'm very, very happy with it.
Next up, we have the least match that's ever been a match. The Fiend Bray Wyatt defeating John Cena in a Firefly Funhouse match.
Oh, man.
I loved this. It was so different from the Boneyard match. This wasn't like... The Boneyard match was just, here are two guys. One of them's pissed the other one off real good. They're going to beat the hell out of each other.
All right, so
it's going to feel like a big movie climactic fight. This felt like the Firefly Funhouse was more of a David Lynch psychological horror.
I'm just
breakdown of John Cena's career.
I'm just going to go out there.
I loved it.
I'm just going to go out and say it right now. This is the worst thing that ever happened to wrestling. And that's with me enjoying it. Like, I thought it was fascinating as a character study. But again, if you have any, man, I don't know how to say this correctly, because I don't want to make anyone upset that really enjoyed it, because I don't want to take anyone's joy away from it. I enjoyed it. I loved the little nods to WCW. I loved, it was funny. Like, it was everything entertainment-wise that I could want. But as a wrestling fan, this was one of the most insulting things I've ever seen in my life. As a pure wrestling fan, as a guy that thinks that when you watch wrestling, you're watching people who legitimately don't like each other wrestle. This was one of the most insulting things I've ever seen.
Except because, growing up, your favorite was the guy who got stronger the more you punched him in the head.
At least they're punching him in the head and he's got that strength. But in this, you've literally got a guy being pulled into a nightmare world. You've got a guy being pulled into different versions of himself. You've got, I mean, like, again, I don't know how to describe this because it was so bizarre that if you talk about Hulk Hogan and him getting punched in the head and getting stronger, like, that's stupid, but at least it's in a wrestling ring with people that are hitting each other and it's not bizarre. I don't know how to describe it. This was a fever dream. It was entertaining as hell. Again, please do not misunderstand me. I did enjoy this. I enjoyed this on a creative level. I enjoyed this on a entertainment level. But in a wrestling sense, this was no match. This was just, I get suspension of belief. And you have to go, okay, well, something, well, an Irish whip is itself isn't something that would actually happen. So you have to suspend your belief for something as simple as that. But this went too far. And this was the strangest thing I've ever seen in my life in professional wrestling. And I wish I could just outright say that I hate it and take the criticism for hating it. But I didn't hate it. I am so conflicted on this because half my brain says this was cool as hell and the other half said this was the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. So I don't know what to say about this. I really am at a loss of words.
Well, I loved it. I thought it was great. I loved all of the nods to Cena's past with, you know, Bray cutting the Ruthless Aggression Kurt Angle promo. When he swung at him saying, "You can look, but you can't touch," which was the Bella's theme.
But again, take it into context of this is on the same night where you're telling me that you know, Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair, two athletes, are having this athletic match, and wrestling matters, and this is important, and this is for a title, and titles matter, and all that stuff, and I believe that this person is tougher than this person, and you're making me believe that this is a real thing that I want to invest my time in, and I want to invest myself in these characters as athletes and as sportsmen. But then you also tell me that John Cena is traveling through time, that John Cena is portraying different characters, that John Cena is doing all these things that in a Nightmare on Elm Street movie would make sense, but in a wrestling world, it's nonsensical. It's
because wrestling itself is nonsensical.
But I feel like there's a line.
I don't look at wrestling as one thing. Wrestling is multiple things. It can be a peak. Who is the better athlete? But at the same time, there was nothing about who is the better competitor between Edge and Randy Orton. You talk about...
But it was still a fight.
The things... what happened between Edge and Orton was, like, six things that should have ended the match. And should have ended people's careers when you look at how certain things are treated. It's... For me, like, I can watch this and I can love this in the context of wrestling. Because wrestling is weird. Wrestling has supernatural stuff to it. The Undertaker can teleport. The Undertaker can control lightning. Kane can make fire shoot out of the pyro. Or shoot out of the turnbuckles.
I
don't question it. I just, this is what they tell me it is. I'm like, okay, I'm here for it.
Maybe I'm splitting hairs, but like when the Undertaker summons lightning or when Kane does fire, it's in a wrestling ring. It doesn't make sense, obviously, but it's not in its own bizarro nightmare world where the rules of reality don't apply. You still have, when it comes to Kane summoning fire and stuff like that, it's still in reality. It's an unrealistic thing, but it's in reality. With the Firefly Funhouse match, you had non-reality. You had legitimate, like, things that could never happen in anything other than an incredible writer's imagination. And I appreciate that. But at the same time, it felt so bizarre that even though I enjoyed it, and I did enjoy it, again, I feel like I'm repeating myself with the Boneyard match, I did enjoy this. But if I think too much about it, I would probably go insane.
I mean, and that's fine, but that's how you react to it. We've already established the fact that the Firefly Funhouse and the Fiend, those reside in their own world, their own reality. This isn't new to us. We've seen that. We're aware of that. Ramblin' Rabbit has been murdered like three times, and he just keeps coming back.
Yeah, but that was in the context of its own thing. When Ramblin' Rabbit gets murdered, he's murdered by another character from the Funhouse in what looks like a pre-taped show that Bray Wyatt puts on for his own amusement. When you have Bray Wyatt now pulling in another person who is not in on the joke, John Cena is not a character on Firefly Funhouse. He's not something that Bray Wyatt produces or creates. When you have another legitimate human being pulled into this madness and acting along with the laws created by this insane creator, to me, that's the line where it goes from being kind of like, oh, well, that's in its own world, to it's like with Matt Hardy whenever he did the Apocalypse match or whatever. It's like now you're mixing the realities together and it leaves a bad taste in my mouth. But it's just me. Again, I don't want to pull anyone's enjoyment around.
Yeah, that's fine.
This.
I loved it. I thought this was great. I loved it. Well,
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
From the breakdown from him going, seeing Bray Wyatt return as the cult leader, swamp leader, Wyatt, I thought that was a super cool moment when they reenacted he reminded Cena of their previous WrestleMania encounter, you know, where he's on his knees and he told John to swing and he didn't, but then this time he did. This time Cena did give into that. Like,
yeah.
There were so many.
So Cena's done, cool, right?
Do what?
Cena's done, right? Like, this has to be it for John Cena.
No.
You don't think so?
I don't think so at all.
Like, to me, it seems like such a good way to write him out as a character arc, to go from, to be faced with his own demons and then fail like this. Even though it's a sad ending for the good guy, it's a good ending. Just from a storyline standpoint, it's a good ending that when he faced up to his own demons in his past and realized the error of his way, they used it against him to defeat him and destroy him. Like, I think that's a great ending.
It's a good ending. I don't think it will be.
I don't think it is either. If it draws money, it draws money.
I think that Cena comes back, and Cena comes back as a heel.
Really?
I think I do. Because look at who everyone, the Fiend, has faced so far. Daniel Bryan went from, you know, he changed Daniel Bryan from heel Daniel Bryan back to who he actually is, to, you know, the babyface independent Daniel Bryan. We've gotten that. Seth Rollins, he turned Seth Rollins into the opportunistic, manipulative D-bag that Seth Rollins, you know, quote unquote, is. He came in with as part of the Shield and, you know, not counting his NXT stuff. Finn Balor. Finn Balor, he turned Finn Balor back into the Prince. So everyone that Wyatt has enacted with, aside from Goldberg, who has no character to change, has, like, come back and changed. So I think that this is the way that we're going to get a short heel run out of Cena before he ultimately turns back, gets a win back over the Fiend, potentially, and that will be his sending off point. But well, I don't think that's how they send Cena away. But the one moment that I'm trying to get to that I loved probably more than anything this whole weekend was when the Fiend had him in the ready to go for the Sister Abigail, and it played clips from the John Cena promo from the week before, 2 weeks before, of at WrestleMania, I will put to rest the most overhyped, overrated wrestler of all time. He was talking about Bray Wyatt,
but they were using it against John Cena.
He turned it against him, and he was talking about John Cena.
Yeah.
So I loved that. I love the NWO nod. Just so much of this I thought was so cool. It was so smart. It really felt like, even though this clearly was not the plan when John Cena beat Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania however many years ago, it made it feel, it tied everything in so well together that just like it for once it felt like they gave a shit that I paid attention as a wrestling fan.
I enjoyed it. I think it was weird and
super weird.
I'm glad that we can agree to disagree on things, because that shows that we're not just like a hive mind. Yeah. And we can still be friends after this, but it was a trip.
Well, let's talk once we stop recording.
Or we won't talk when we stop recording. We'll see what happens. Yeah.
And then the main event after the Firefly Funhouse, Drew McIntyre defeating Brock Lesnar for the WWE Championship.
Goldberg versus Strowman Part 2, because it was the same thing.
No, it went double the time.
Oh.
I think the moment was worth the match. I thought the build was a lot stronger than the match was. I was hoping we would get like an actual wrestling match out of these guys, because again, same. Brock Lesnar is capable of so much. Drew McIntyre is one of the best big men going right now, period. End of statement. It devolved into just Suplex City, F5s, Claymore kicks.
The same that was bullshit from the night before. I said that Orton and Edge was probably the most disappointing part for WrestleMania for me, but I think it actually was probably this one, because I bought into the hype of Lesnar versus McIntyre. I did think they were going to have like this, maybe not a 20-minute classic, but they were going to have maybe a 10-15-minute hoss fight. These guys were going to go at it. This was your studs. These were your two super studs going at it, and it was going to make Drew McIntyre look like $1 million. But instead, they just went through the same formula of finisher, 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 and Lesnar loses. And it was a cool moment for McIntyre, but I feel like the way they did it kind of took the wind out of his sails just a little bit. And I don't think I would have felt that way if there had been a crowd. But without the crowd and without the energy and the way it went down, I feel like we got off to a bad start for his title reign. And I hope I'm wrong, because I was wrong about AJ Styles when he came to WWE. I'm hoping I'm wrong about this.
And I disagree, because like I loved the fact that for the first time, I don't remember who, I saw it somewhere, but apparently there is a Drew McIntyre did an interview. It might have been on The Bump, maybe. But so the ending where he's celebrating with the title, he's filled with emotion. Brock Lesnar is still selling. He's still just laid out in the middle of the ring. I thought that was a really nice touch and really classy of Lesnar to do. But McIntyre looks into the camera and says, "You're here with me." Like, you're not here, but you're here with me.
That was cool.
This is all for you. I loved that. I thought that was genuine. I thought that was touching. He did an interview where it's like, no, we are told explicitly, you don't look into the camera. You don't acknowledge the camera. Like, he assumed that it would have been cut out. But when he saw that it was left in there, he appreciated it. And it was just, I thought that was such a good I thought it was a fantastic moment. Of course, it is never going to compare if you had a crowd who was desperate to see Lesnar lose and you were and was desperate to see Brock or Drew McIntyre get the win there.
Right.
But I thought it was as best as they could have done given the circumstances.
Short of the match being disappointing for me, I agree with you on that. I think the title celebration...
Oh, yeah, the match was also super disappointing. Like, I was not a big fan of the match itself, but I thought the payoff, like, the after the match was the more important part, and it made the match itself worth it.
I was really scared that they weren't going to put the title on Drew, especially after they took it off of Goldberg. I thought they were going to pull the thing that they always pull, where you're like, okay, well, Lesnar's definitely losing this time, and then he was going to win. So when Drew McIntyre actually won, I was extremely happy because I think there is so much money in Drew McIntyre. Much money. The dude is a freak of nature, and I can't wait to see what he does.
This is where he should have been a year ago when he first came up to the main roster.
And not Dolph Ziggler's buddy.
Yeah.
Personal
and
friend.
And then Shane's lackey.
Yeah, yeah. So that was WrestleMania. It was the most... In a year of surreal moments, it was the most surreal wrestling I've ever seen in my life. Both the fact that we didn't watch it together, there was no crowd, and the matches that they put on were unlike anything they've ever done before. But I feel like in the situation, you had to. Because you know that if they had a crowd, if things had been normal, there would have been no Boneyard match. There would have been no Firefly Funhouse match. So what they did because of what they had to do ended up being more memorable than what they probably would have done normally. So
plus it's going to be memorable because it wasn't, it's going to be memorable. This is a history making, you said it would be relegated to a footnote. I don't think it would be. I think this is going to be a WrestleMania people talk about forever.
Oh,
because of just like, man, remember when they couldn't do it in front of a crowd? Remember when they split it between two nights and did a bunch of weird, crazy stuff?
You forgot a match.
I was actually getting ready to do a whole, like, well, actually, there's one more thing.
Oh, what's that?
The real main event of WrestleMania, as we saw on Monday Night Raw, Drew McIntyre defeated The Big Show to retain the WWE Championship in the 19th match of the weekend and the final match of WrestleMania.
Oh, no, so you missed another match, though.
Oh, did I?
Yeah, you missed Gronk winning the 24/7 title.
Okay, so Monday, the Raw after WrestleMania is always such a
big show,
big show, big surprises, big events, big debuts,
right.
Returns. You never know what's going to happen.
Right.
This is easily the worst Raw after Mania we've ever had, and I get it.
I didn't watch it. I didn't even read it, so I have no idea what happened.
Literally, okay. So Aleister Black defeated. Oh my God, I'm blaming UHA Nation. Apollo Crews. He beat Apollo Crews in about a 30-minute match. Apparently that was phenomenal, but okay. I feel like that would have only really benefited him if there was a crowd there who could see, oh yeah, no, this is how good Apollo Crews is.
Right.
Because the internet fans know how good Apollo Crews is.
Oh yeah.
He just got called up way too early.
Yeah, and given nothing to work with.
Yeah. Nia Jax returned to no fanfare. Like, no pun intended, but, like,
well, to be fair,
yets. It wasn't a shocking angle. She just squashed, I think it was Deonna Purrazzo.
It was. I did read that because I was like, I know at some point, Nia Jax is like Jason in Friday the 13th. I know at some point she's going to be back, and you can't stop her. All you can do is just hide and hope she goes away.
That was my prediction in the group chat of it's just like, oh, they're not going to do Rousey in front of no crowd. They're going to bring back Nia, and she'll take on Becky. Hey, I'm the reason you're as popular as you are because I broke your face. Now I'm going to break your face and stake your title.
To be fair, it would have been the same reaction had there been a crowd, so smart move.
Oh, snap.
I went there.
They showed the real main event of WrestleMania, which was that Big Show match, which still went like less than 10 minutes. I'm trying to think of other... Bianca Belair confirmed that she is a member of the Raw roster now because they had another... First, it was a singles match. Then it was a tag match. Then it was a six-person tag.
Yeah.
With the Street Profits and Garza and Theory. And that's really all I remember.
And look, we are in a holding pattern right now. There's nothing that matters right now.
And I get that, and I don't blame them for it. Honestly, like at this point, they've moved past WrestleMania. They need to stop doing shows. They need to stop taping stuff because there's no reason for that number of people to be meeting.
Right.
Like, even if they're healthy, which apparently some of them aren't, which is why some of these matches had to change. you know, Roman Reigns was out of WrestleMania. The Miz was out of WrestleMania.
Yeah.
So much stuff has happened. So Dana Brooke was originally supposed to be in that elimination match. So I don't know what they do to fill the 7 hours of TV time that they have every week to fill. I know they've already filmed all the NXT stuff, so that I think starting tonight is when we... Or no, it was last week, because last week the North American Championship was defended. And tonight is supposed to be the Ciampa-Gargano match. So, like, so, NXT's been filmed up for a little bit. I don't know how far in advance they have stuff taped for TV, for Raw and SmackDown. I guess SmackDown will find out, but...
So, in other words, stay tuned next week for a return of this solo Asa Gray Pro Wrestling Unscripted podcast. Hey, I do...
Who knows?
I do have some cool news to leave out on tonight.
Okay.
This is a spoiler for AEW, but it's not really nothing. Nothing really happened, but someone, Mr. Pink, just sent me a picture. Guess who showed up on AEW tonight in the crowd when Marco, apparently Jake Roberts cut a promo on Marco, and guess who showed up in the crowd?
Who?
Jackson Crowley.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. I'll send you the picture. Awesome. Yeah, I'm going to send you a picture. So, don't know if he's going to be a major part going forward or what. He was just in the crowd, so this may have just been he was in town, he decided to be there. But sending it to you now. So that's very, very cool. Jonathan, Jackson, if you're listening, man, cool.
Yeah, that's badass. Also, I can hear it raining through my headphones. So yes. Apparently we're in a tornado watch, but.
Yeah, I was kind of worried power was going to go out because we ain't doing this on a laptop. At least I'm not. I'm on my computer.
Like, no, I'm on my PC.
Yeah, so we're going to cut it off here. We're going to wrap it up. And I remember before the show, Asa and I were like, man, do you think we can do an hour? Well.
I saw that too.
Some things never change. All right, that's going to do it for us tonight on Podzilla 1985 Pro Wrestling Unscripted. We are going to be back tomorrow. Myself, Lindsay, and Jesse will be 6 feet apart, but we will be recording after dark like normal. So that should be fun. It'll be good to get out of the house because I'm going insane here. That is tomorrow. As far as tonight goes, we want to thank you guys for tuning in, and we know the shows have been weird. The pre-shows have been weird. For those of you that are still supporting us on Patreon right now through this weird, weird time, we appreciate it, and we do have something special planned for you guys. Ace and I were just talking about it before the show. But that's it. We love you guys so much. Thank you for being worried about us. Thank you for your concern. Thank you for loving us. We'll be back tomorrow, and Asa, at some point, I hope to God I'll see you again and we can get back to normal.
Oh, we will.
I hope so. We'll
get you a webcam, and we'll next time we have to do something like this, we'll do a video call, and we can reach at our cams longingly.
Yeah, I've been looking longingly at a lot of cams lately. Anyway, we're gonna get out of here. We'll see you guys tomorrow after dark. I guess Asa, hit us with those links.
Facebook and Twitter.com/Podzilla1985, Patreon.com/Podzilla1985. I'm sure you've noticed if you are a patron, our pre-show output has gone down. But like Shannon said, we're working on ideas to kind of make that up to everybody. If you drop off, we completely understand. Yeah. There's not going to be any hard will. Hopefully, no. we'll win you back when you're able to join us back again. But
the economy's in shambles.
Just listening to us, you know, your support means the absolute world to us. So patreon.com, of course, podzilla1985.com. If you missed the solo episodes, the preview episode I did of WrestleMania, you can go and check those out, as well as Hunter, Cody, Tanner, and Jesse just put up a episode of Podzilla 1985 Plays. They're doing a Ghostbusters tabletop game they ran through and recorded. So you can go and check that out as well. And then I'm going to plug myself, twitch.tv/the5starman with the number 5. I'm going to do Final Fantasy VII. I'm going to do a playthrough of that starting with the remake on Friday night.
Okay.
Probably starting around 7, 8 o'clock Central. We'll see. Because that's going to come out and I'm very, very excited. I might end up actually even streaming tonight, which would be over by the time you're listening to this. But who knows? We'll see. but I've been... You know, we haven't been able to do the podcast like normal, but I am absolutely loving streaming. I'm having a ton of fun with it.
And yeah, you're killing it, by the way.
Everyone who's stopped in and watching or enjoying, I very much appreciate you. And hopefully, you know, we'll keep going and see what happens with that.
Lindsay is a big fan. She tries to watch it every time she gets to. I myself I want to, but like I'm so scatterbrained right now. My world is just, it's like the Firefly Funhouse match. What is it? What is
no,
it?
No, I get it.
Anyway, thank you, Asa, for bringing me back. I missed you so much. We'll see you guys tomorrow on After Dark. Until then, take care of yourselves. Later.